Welcome to the Wampa's Lair Podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl Eclair and Jason Hunt, discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out here in the Wampa's Lair. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. This is episode number 205. I'm, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Galen Erso to my director, Krennic, we have Carl Eclair.
Oh, thanks for making me Galen.
Of course.
I love Galen. Jin, whatever I do it for you. To protect you, so you understand.
I understand.
Oh man, I can't wait for that movie, Jason.
Oh, I know. Me too.
It's going to be so good. I have a lot of confidence that movie's going to rock our world.
I hope so. Oh my gosh!
But I'm excited for this episode though too.
Yeah.
Because
that was a really weird response. Sorry.
Because we're going to get an opportunity to talk about this new Ahsoka novel, which was amazing, in my opinion.
It was very good. Very, very good.
We're going to put this forward right now. If you've not read the novel and you're planning on it, you may not want to listen to this episode until after that's happened. Because we are going to talk anything and everything. We're going to spoil the heck out of it. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't read the novel, maybe hit the stop button until you have. Or if you don't plan on reading the novel, hopefully we'll give you a good sense of what's in there. Because we're going to talk about a lot of it. There's so much. There's a lot of really good information in this novel.
Yes.
And it's just a really good story, I think. Before we even get into our matchup, as many of you probably know, we did launch our Patreon page just over 2 weeks ago now. 2 weeks ago. Which was a lot of fun to put together, and again, I think you all know what Patreon is. If you don't, it's a monthly subscription service. Essentially, you pledge some money to the show, and you get some cool rewards, basically bonus episodes and some other options as well, which you can check out on the site. But before we start recording, we'd like to give a shout out to a couple of our first patrons on the page. The very first, of course, who is the man who actually helped build the page. The wonderful Sir Riley Blanton has become our first patron on our Patreon page, which is really cool because Riley is obviously super supportive when it comes to the show in general. He helped me put the page together, and now he's actually physically contributing himself, which I did not expect nor ask. So thank you, Riley, for being our first patron. And of course, and also I'd like to give a shout out to Bradley Hall, also one of our first patrons on the page as well. So Bradley, thank you so much for your contribution. Bradley sent some really nice notes to us as well over Patreon, giving us some feedback on the show, what he likes about it, which we really appreciate and really happy to have you as one of our patrons, one of our supporters of the show. So Bradley and Riley, we thank you.
Oh my gosh! We should probably stop doing that,
Jason,
so often. But
don't
it's too
do
much
to
fun.
Me. Yeah, don't do that to me. if you would like to be a supporter of the show, be a patron. Again, patreon.com/wampuslerpodcast. You can find all the information about what we're doing with Patreon, and you can pledge yourself if you feel so inclined.
Indeed. But we had a matchup.
We did. It was a matchup to bring us into this episode, thinking all things Ahsoka, where we put two pretty powerful, certainly Jedi and soon-to-be Jedi, mm-hmm. in a matchup, which is Ahsoka Tano from the Clone Wars versus Rey, potentially Skywalker, but most likely not.
She'll probably
just be Rey Smith. She's Chris
Rey and Phillies.
She's Chris Hothice Planet Smith's daughter from the Sarlacc Pit. That doesn't make sense.
No.
But, yeah. So
she's probably like Rey and Tillys, you know.
I'd like that. But we have these two going up against each other, Ahsoka versus Rey. And what did the Larians say?
Well, we had quite a few responses. Ian Raletta said, Ahsoka. Thomas Davis, Ahsoka would wreck Rey. Adam J. Taylor goes, Rey. Brian V. Klein says, Ahsoka, Rey is still raw, and Ahsoka had a great teacher. Kenny Crayley Jr., Ahsoka, Rey is still at the first stages of her training. Dave Laidlaw, Rey. Dave Broadway, we had two Daves back to back there, says Ahsoka, no question. Ian Statsney basically gave it a tie because he would like to believe that if they ever met, they'd exchange stories rather than blows. Rey seems to love stories about heroes, Luke, Han, etc. So I think Ahsoka would hold her captivated by tales of the Clone Wars. I like that.
Yeah, I do too. I really like that.
Matthew Mark says, Rey's got some training to do. And thinks that Ahsoka takes this one. Our buddy Jazz gives it to Ahsoka all the way without a doubt. She's the Chosen One's Padawan and was just kick-ass with two lightsabers. So thanks, Jazz. Clark Wilson gives it to Ahsoka. Walter, and I completely forgot how to pronounce your last name again, Walter, sorry, says this is a tough one. Because Rey might be another Chosen One, we just don't know yet. Assuming she is not, his vote goes to Ahsoka. Thomas Babcock also gives it to Ahsoka. Jeffrey Beaumont, Ahsoka, because trained by Master Anakin. And Jeffrey Fishbach says, I love Rey, but have to give it to Ahsoka. On Twitter, at DamianCreese1 gives it to Rey. There's so much we don't know about her. If we know more, she could win even now. At R2SW says this is a very comparable to the Kanan versus Ahsoka debate when we did it earlier. Says we don't know enough about Rey, so it'd have to be Ahsoka. At Mon Cala Hottie gives it to Ahsoka, and at Jedi Jack 13 gives it to Rey in a heartbeat. And finally, we got an email from Patrick who says he will give it to Ahsoka because she is skilled and her book is strong with the young adult community since it got to number one. So, I figured I should read that one because we're going to be talking about the book. But that gives us a final Larian tally of 15 for Ahsoka, 4 for Rey, and 1 tie. Mm. What do you say?
You know, considering we're talking about the Ahsoka novel, I'm going to have to just say Ahsoka as well. Because, you know, like everybody kind of pointed out, we don't know enough about Rey yet. I mean, she was certainly skilled at the end of Force Awakens, but, you know, again, that's kind of the force being channeled through her. To me, she's almost like pure force energy there. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's in response to who she's fighting. So where her skill level is, like while she is definitely skilled, I could see her taking on somebody like Barriss Offee and winning. Not Ahsoka. Like Ahsoka is just really, really, she grew up in the Clone Wars. She's being trained by Anakin. She's a bit aggressive herself. So yeah, I got to give it to Ahsoka.
Yeah, I'm going to give it to Ahsoka as well. Yes, Anakin is technically her master, but she's also learned so much from Obi-Wan and from Rex. She's basically had a whole group of teachers that she's had throughout the Clone Wars. So due to that and her natural talent, I'm going to have to give it to Ahsoka as well. Maybe by the end of episode 8, my tune will change. We just have no idea at this point. So yeah. I'm going to give it to Ahsoka.
If they keep leveling up Rey at the level they did in Force Awakens throughout this trilogy, she's going to be more powerful than God by the end of episode 9. So she goes from like a nobody scavenger to like defeating like Darth Vader's heir in one movie.
Right.
That's not a knock on it. It was a bit much in Force Awakens, I think, now in retrospect. So we've got to humble Rey a bit.
Yeah.
So to make her character more compelling.
Yeah.
So, and I think that'll happen in 8.
Yes. She's going to be riding this high and Luke's going to be like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah.
"What are you doing?
Shut up.
Let's break you down, start from the beginning and do this again."
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So, Jason, let's get into this novel, Ahsoka,
yes.
Written by E.K. Johnston, who's Canadian. Mm-hmm. So I think that's just – it's really cool. It's a YA novel, which I wasn't aware of when I first started. I mean, it's not – it's hard. It's easy to imagine. The print is pretty big, and it's not super long. But that being said, and I'd say this also in comparison with Lost Stars, which is also YA by Claudia Gray, while they're young adult, there's nothing to them specifically that makes them young adult beyond the font size to me. I mean, it doesn't read like it's a young person's book, maybe to some degree. I mean, I'm not a connoisseur of literature myself, so I'm not one to really say anything. But my friend Greg, who gave me the early advance copy that he had, Greg is a professor of literature at a college here in Boston. So I always ask him, I'm like, what do you think of like stuff like this? Because like, you know, you're a literature professor. He's like, well, you know, he goes, I'm not reading it like and expecting it to be Mark Twain. Like, you know, it's my popcorn stuff. It's fun. And this certainly is fun. And I think it is really well written as well. So, I mean, my initial thought was when I finished that book, I was like, wow, that was just a lot of fun. Like, it was a really fun novel. There's a lot of really cool information in there, which we're obviously going to get into in the episode. But I think just my initial thoughts was this was just a lot of fun. Like, it was a really good story. And it fit really well into the canon. So
it did.
What did you think? And I would say this, too. Like, remember, like, when Kenobi came out? We don't meet Kenobi till like 30, like a third into the book. Like he's not a central character for a little while. They're setting up those side characters. Ahsoka is the main character throughout the entire novel.
Yes.
So I really liked that as well. I appreciated that.
Yes. It took me a while to get to this book. Upon completion, I was like, this is a really nice book. I liked it. It's not – if you're looking for something that's, you know, galaxy shaping in the new canon, this is not the book for you. This is a character piece for Ahsoka. It tells you more of who she is after Order 66 and getting towards where she ends up in Rebels. And if you're not – as long as you're not expecting this to be – you know, this big galaxy spanning, you know, huge impact on the galaxy sort of thing, you're going to really like this book. Mm-hmm. It's going to, you know, it's a much smaller scale story, which is good for Ahsoka at this point. And the book is well written. It's a lot of fun, as you said. It's also a really quick read.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, what? I've got the copy here in front of me. It's 350 plus pages, maybe. But due to the font size and everything, it's going to be a quick read. And just the way it's written, too, it's a quick read.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of really neat stuff hidden in this, which we will definitely talk about. But I liked it. It was really good to revisit Ahsoka through her eyes, basically, in this book. And I haven't listened to it. From what I hear, the audiobook being read by Ashley Eckstein is also very good. So,
I bet.
Which I'm sure it is.
Right.
I'm almost tempted to go get it just to hear how she did it. But the book itself is really good too. So,
yeah. I mean, I finished this like my friend Greg gave it to me a little over a month early, and I think I read it in, you know, a few days. And when you said, you know, I'm done, let's talk about it. It had been like a month since I'd finished, though, so I just went back and reread it in less than a week. I mean, it reads very fast. It's a page turner. Like it moves so quick. It's just so well paced. It's like a four part episode of like Rebels or Clone Wars or something. There's so many of these scenes that I could have easily visualized because of Clone Wars and Rebels. So I really liked that. I like how well she's able to put on paper something that we could easily imagine visually.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Definitely. This definitely fits in that world of Star Wars animation. And it's something that could easily be translated to Star Wars animation if we were so inclined.
Right.
So,
So the nice thing about this novel is, so where it lands canonically, where it lands in the story is, It starts a year after Revenge of the Sith.
Yes.
We learned that right at the beginning of the novel. By the way, heads up, spoilers are now like the door is open. Like, we are not going to censor ourselves. So again, if you stuck with us and you're like, oh crap, I meant to turn it off, turn it off.
Right.
So, so the novel begins approximately 1 year after the events of Revenge of the Sith. So this is, mm-hmm. Relatively recent. This is not right before Rebels by any means. And I kind of like that because in this, like you said, Jason, the novel doesn't cover like this huge expanse of story. I mean, the novel itself, the entire novel, it's packed into about 6 months of events, if that. So there's what I like about that, too, is it means that we could get several more Ahsoka novels or comics or something, which is really cool. Like, her story is definitely set up here. The novel kind of ends with showing eventually how she's connected to the show Rebels, but there is a lot of ground to cover between those. So I really like that because there's a possibility for more.
Exactly. They've left the door open to tell more of her story. And if the fan reaction to, the character and this book is any indication, we're going to get more of it somewhere down the road.
Yeah. I mean, young girls have really taken to the Ahsoka character.
I've taken to Ahsoka.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not like I'm not making it a sexist thing, but I think it's really cool, though, because I think both Rey and even before Rey, though, Ahsoka is the first character in Star Wars that young women really got energized for.
Right.
Which makes sense because she's a young woman. Back at the last job I had, there was a girl in the youth program who loved drawing, and she got super into Clone Wars. She was obsessed with Ahsoka. She was always drawing Ahsoka. Like, whenever there'd be like a youth event and there's like the whiteboard, I'd be like, hey, go draw Ahsoka. She'd be like, okay. So, and it was always really good. Like, she was really good at drawing Ahsoka. Her character is really compelling, and we learn a lot about her in this novel. And again, like, it, E.K. Johnston does a fantastic job of just really translating this character story moving forward. I never felt any sort of disconnect between the Ahsoka we saw in Clone Wars and now in Rebels and this novel. Whereas, like, sometimes I feel like some Star Wars novels, it's like, I don't know if that's exactly how, Han Solo would act, or that seems a little far-fetched for Luke's character. Sometimes like the legend stuff would really take things a little in kind of an odd way. This Ahsoka novel has really just like hit the nail on the head of who her character is.
Definitely. I do like the fact that in this post Order 66 world, Ahsoka is basically hiring herself out as a mechanic. Mm-hmm. Because it shows how much of Anakin has rubbed off on her, and how much of Anakin's skills have rubbed off on her. And she's not as good as he is. She says that in the book, but she's good enough. And so she's basically under this guise of a mechanic rather than a Jedi at this point. So,
like you said, it's really neat. There's one thing I like about the novel, too, is how they have these interlude sections.
Mm-hmm.
And
similar to the Aftermath novels.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Which E.K. Johnston says that she stole from Chuck Wendig.
Oh, nice. So. Yeah, kind of like how StarWars.com has now stolen the idea of doing polls on their website, too, from us. Just like they do
exactly.
This Is Madness.
Exactly. I mean, we're just that influential, Carl.
Yeah, if only that were true.
Right.
there's essentially six interludes throughout the book, and the very first one comes directly from that panel in Celebration Europe this past summer, mm-hmm. where Dave Filoni talked about how there was going to be this episode kind of right before the events of Revenge of the Sith, where Ahsoka goes back to Mandalore with Rex, and Anakin meets up with her there. That entire scene is kind of. It's in the very first interlude. The very start of this book starts with an interlude,
yes.
which sees Ahsoka on Mandalore, and Anakin gives her her lightsabers back. Which, that's kind of a monumental move for Anakin. She's not a Jedi anymore, and it's clear that she didn't obviously build any after she left the Order. And mm-hmm. we don't know the time lapse technically. Maybe you do, Jay. I don't know if this is something in canon between when Ahsoka leaves and the events of Revenge of the Sith, because I know Clone Wars essentially spans about 3 years. My guess is where they kind of cut at, you know, the Clone Wars TV series is it's probably the end of the second year. So I feel like there's been a whole year between Ahsoka leaving and the events of Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, I'd say somewhere around a year, give or take a couple months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they say the Clone Wars is about 3 years. Well, maybe it's like 3 years and 6 months or something like that. You know, they've never given us an exact chronology for it, at least in the new canon. So I would say it's probably somewhere around a year before the end events of Revenge of the Sith. So when she leaves.
Okay. But so in this, you know, this first interlude, we see Anakin show up. You know, he's still has that. They seem to have that camaraderie still. Mm-hmm. And she gets her lightsabers back and she's there to fight Maul. Like Darth Maul is back on Mandalore. Which is interesting too, to maybe eventually get where that story came from, right? Because he was on Mandalore, but the Emperor defeated him there. But he kept him alive for some other plan. So we can speculate that maybe this has something to do with Palpatine's machinations.
Well, we did learn in the the Darth Maul comic that came out.
Son of Dathomir.
The Son of Dathomir comic that Maul escaped. Sidious killed Mother Talzin.
That's right.
And then Maul basically licked his wounds, heading back to his faction of the Mandalorians. And from what it appears is that he went back to Mandalore with his faction to try and reestablish himself there. And then that's why Ahsoka gets sent to Mandalore here. Because if I remember what Dave Filoni said from the panel correctly, is that Ahsoka ends up teaming up with Bo-Katan, and they find out that Maul is there on Mandalore, and they're the ones that bring this information to the Jedi Order. And since they did that, that's why Anakin and Obi-Wan ask Ahsoka to come back to Mandalore with them. Of course, en route, that's when Anakin and Obi-Wan get the call to go back to Coruscant because Palpatine's captured. And so these events on Mandalore are taking place fairly concurrently with the events of Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
And there's an interesting scene in here of Ahsoka confronting Darth Maul.
Mm-hmm.
Where basically he says that they're two sides of the same coin. They're both... Well, we get the idea that they're both, you know, former apprentices, you know, who are broken in some way. And it's just a very odd, very kind of interesting to see that comparison drawn between the two of them.
Right. And Maul keeps referring to her as Lady Tano.
Yes, because she's not a Jedi.
Exactly. And I think that bothers her.
A little bit, yeah. And so... when he says Lady Tano in Rebels, when they meet there on Malachor, that's a reference back to this event now.
Yeah.
So
we're connecting some dots right off the bat, which is cool.
Exactly. And we don't get the full story of how this capture attempt goes, and apparently Maul ultimately escapes, but... because then it cuts back to the normal timeline of the book.
Right. So. Maul will run and hide as he always does. He's a coward. Sorry. That's Grievous.
That's
awesome. That's the opening of this novel. It's kind of this exciting, you know, really like it pulls you in right away, but then it like immediately shoves you into Ahsoka's present world, which is really, really lonely. You know, she's on this planet called Thebeska. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. That's how I pronounce it.
Yeah, I think so.
But she's there, and it's just like she's living this lonely existence. And I like that right off the bat, kind of what she's struggling with is she's struggling with how to connect to the Force. And what's interesting is there's got to be some backstory too, right, between that year essentially that year and change that she was out of the Order before kind of being pulled back into Mandalore.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a period there too where she's obviously going to have that same struggle. And what's neat though is this is Ahsoka's early struggle is that of being alone, and she's wondering how does she connect to the Force because she feels guilty for abandoning the Jedi, and she almost feels guilty that she's in her mind one of the lone survivors of Order 66.
Right.
You know, like, what did I do to deserve surviving this? And there's this great line in the novel. It's on page 23 in my version, but I have this early advanced copy, so it's not going to probably line up. But it says the Force was always going to be a part of her. And I like that. Like this reality that just because she's not a Jedi anymore doesn't mean that the Force doesn't exist within her. It's not like she's incapable of tapping into it anymore. And again, right. I think we've gotten a lot of that in light of Force Awakens, right? The idea of Maz Kanata and this reality that the Force is bigger than the Jedi and the Sith. And it is, you know, and if somebody has that ability, if somebody has that innate ability to connect to the Force, it's not going to go away because they're not a Jedi anymore.
Right. But and she struggles with that because, you know, like you said, not only is she feeling guilty for being a survivor, basically, she's got survivor's guilt, but she's also trying to avoid being found by the Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And so if she uses the Force, that attracts attention, and she can't afford to do that. And so basically, the whole present day part of this book starts with the family that she's basically working for as a mechanic lets her know that the Empire is coming. And she slips away without really saying goodbye, which she also feels very guilty about.
Yeah. She's got a lot on her shoulders.
Yes.
Kind of like Luke at the end of Force Awakens. Know what I'm saying? but yeah, and that's kind of where we learn kind of how her mode of existence now is one of survival and of secrecy. You know, she's going by the name Ashla. She's yet to like tell people her real name, which is
yes.
Ahsoka. And yeah, the Empire shows up on Thebeska. So she takes off. And again, like that's how she's going to survive. And she goes to this planet called Rada, which is a backworld planet that, again, the assumption there is like, okay, the Empire won't certainly show up here, right? So
right.
This is a place I can stay hidden. And it's a farming planet. And she knows, again, she can kind of plug in her technical skills to offer those same services she was doing on Thebeska.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a curious friend right off the bat, you know, this woman named Kaden. Sounds similar to Kanan.
A little bit.
You know, but Kaden shows up and is very curious about Ahsoka, and she's essentially the one who's going to invite Ahsoka kind of into her family, you know,
right?
To do you, Jason, dink, dink, family.
Yes, well, which I, of course, stole from Steve Glosson. So,
oh, okay.
Yes, the dink, dink.
So, yes. Which means quotations, by the way, in case you didn't know, because you can't see what we're doing. so Ahsoka, kind of early on in the novel, though, I think, you know, she is somebody who is kind of keeping to herself. She likes that. She wants to maintain her secrecy. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want to open up too much. I think again, on the surface level, the practical level of she needs to stay hidden for her own survival. But I think it's also because of how guilty she's feeling. She knows what it's like to lose her friends. She doesn't want to have to risk losing that feeling of loss again. Right. So she's kind of, she's living a sheltered life in two ways, both emotionally as well as physically.
Yeah.
But Kaden is kind of like this. I think she's right around Ahsoka's age, but you know, she's just kind of intrigued. This is an off world where people don't come and settle on Rada. Like this is like your small town USA. People just kind of grow up and do what the person before them did and their family did. And that's just kind of the motion of life on Rada. It's not exactly very exciting.
No. It's a bunch of farmers. They farm enough basically to, have enough for themselves and for, bartering purposes and stuff. You know, it's not like they're, you know, selling off-world in any significant way. And it's a very small, tight-knit community. And Ahsoka, of course, being new and being a Togruta, stands out Mm-hmm. And so they, you know, they give her space at first, but Kaden wants her to come and meet everybody. And so she does in order to not be too intriguing.
Yeah. I'll say this, you know, some of the side characters I don't really care about in this novel, to be honest. Mm-hmm. The only one I really cared about was Kaden, who they obviously do a lot to set up and mm-hmm. make her character important. But a lot of the other farmers that we kind of meet, I don't like dislike them or anything, but I don't really care about them. That's to me, you know, one of the differences between, you know, John Jackson Miller's Kenobi, right? Like the whole beginning of that book is setting up the other characters. And at first, like, I was like, oh, where's Kenobi? But eventually, like, okay, I'm enjoying this story too, though. Like, I like these characters. So then when Kenobi does come in, you also care about the other characters.
Right.
I think with Ahsoka, that's kind of all who I care about. So the other characters, while they're fine and they're important insofar as they further Ahsoka's story, right? Like, we don't,
right.
At least me, I don't personally care about them all that much as their own characters. And again, I think that's an argument for why they did what they did with Force Awakens with Luke, right? Like, if Luke's in at the beginning of that movie, we already don't care as much about Rey and Finn and Poe.
Right.
Because we want to know what's going on with Luke.
Exactly. Exactly. I think for the most part, I'm in agreement with you. Kaden obviously is very important to the story because she's the primary mode of contact that Ahsoka has with anybody else outside of, you know, of herself on Rada. Mm-hmm. The only other one, you know, her sister Miara is also somewhat interesting later on. The only other one that I find somewhat interesting is the guy who runs the bar.
Selden,
I'm forgetting his
Selden. Yep.
Selden. Yeah.
Selden,
because he's another Togruta.
Yep.
And he's got two mechanical arms, I think.
Yeah.
Mechanical arm and a mechanical leg or something like that.
Yep.
A thresher accident was what we were told.
Right. Which is also what took out Kaden Mira's parents, is a thresher. Yes. Some big thresher accident killed their parents.
So. Right. So Kaden and Miara are orphans, you know, here on Rada. And so that's another way that Ahsoka kind of connects with them.
Because she, in a sense, is an orphan.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, too, because later on in the novel, when they start getting closer, when they start asking her questions about her adopted parents,
right,
she'll always kind of chuckle to herself because she's obviously thinking of Anakin and Obi-Wan.
Right.
And, you know, did they ever bicker? She kind of chuckles to herself. Oh, yes. You know,
all the time.
Yeah. So Ahsoka's had a little bit more of a human upbringing than I think she gives herself credit for.
Yes.
She's not as unrelatable as she thinks she is at first.
Right. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, she's when we were talking about our matchup, she's had all these teachers, you know.
Yeah.
Yes. Anakin's her master, but we've had Obi-Wan and Rex primarily there as well. But, you know, we've also had Yoda. Luminara was there for an episode. You know, things like that. She's had a bunch of people be her family.
Right.
And so when she's sort of invited to become part of this family here on Rada, at first she's very hesitant, but it's not like she hasn't had that before.
Yeah. Well, again, I think it's that fear of loss. She doesn't want to lose people close to her again, like she did.
Mm-hmm.
Something I like too early on with the way she does kind of quickly feel somewhat at home though on Rada. She appreciates the simplicity of life there, and kind of that mundane routine. And what I really like about that is it helps Ahsoka reconnect with the Force. She finally feels comfortable enough here to start really like letting herself go deep into meditation, because it sounds like her meditation life has been very dark in light of Order 66, which makes sense. And you know, she's willing to kind of put in the work towards that part of her life again on Rada. And I think that's important. That shows that she's comfortable there. She's already more at home there than she was on Thibesca, because she's going further. She's somewhat reaching out. She's letting herself meet people. And as a result, she's willing to go deeper into the Force in her meditation. Mm-hmm. So Ahsoka's growing right off the bat.
Yes.
Which I think is great.
And one other little interesting thing, she brought a little bag of junk metal pieces with her from Thebeska. That was basically all that she took, other than a few essentials. Did you suspect what this was going to be from the start like I did?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Like the very first time it's mentioned, no, definitely not. I was like, okay, so she has some like important trinkets. It's, you know, it's probably just some of her favorite Star Wars toys. you know, but yeah, I mean, but as it continued to be mentioned, especially like when she finds those caves to like hide all of her personal stuff, I was like, yeah. I bet you these are like pieces for a lightsaber.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's what.
But
it
I did
really
not think it initially. Yeah. Hey, crystals.
But yeah, when they first mentioned these random junk pieces, like what would she need those for? And I'm like, oh. I think I know. But like you said, as she's getting to know some of these farmers here on Rada, she's also gone out and explored, and she's found some caves to hide some personal things and to use in case anything goes wrong, because that's what she wants to make sure that she's always got a backup plan, because you never know with the Empire. And it's a good thing she did that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because who shows up?
The Empire.
What a shocker.
Yeah. we meet this villain character who I could care less about. They don't develop him at all, in my opinion. He's literally just there to push the story. He's useless.
He's in like three scenes in the entire book.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like a contractor who's like, we could use Rada to produce this protein stuff for the Empire. And then, you know, once we've used up a crop of it, then we leave because that poisons the soil and we'll move on to the next place.
Yeah.
It's really, he's not, you know, very interesting.
No, he's not a compelling villain at all.
No.
I mean, I think that the central villain essentially is just the Empire itself.
Yes.
Which is fine because it's a developing empire anyway. You know, we're going to get his character's name is Jeneth, and then we are going to get this Inquisitor, the sixth brother, which we'll get into a little bit more later.
And then wasn't there a an Imperial like officer later on when Kaden was captured that interrogated her? Or was that Jeneth?
No, it's not Jeneth, and the character doesn't even have a name. It's just an Imperial officer.
But yeah. Okay.
But yeah, I mean I think the Empire itself is the villain. You know, that's the villainous character. We don't need a strong individual villain here because the Empire is this growing villain throughout the story.
Yes.
But what's interesting this time is when the Empire shows up, Ahsoka's response is different. She doesn't run. She could. Right. She has the same option. She has the ship. She could leave. But she's developed relationships now. And again, that's the difference. That's what that shows right there, the growth in Ahsoka. She's started to build connections with some of the folks here, and she's not going to leave them this time.
Right.
So she's going to stick around.
One thing I do want to hit before we move on too much farther is there's the second.
I was just going to go there. Yeah. Yeah.
It is, you know, it basically goes back to the first time she ran is the idea, or one of the first times she ran, after Order 66. Basically we get the information here that she and Rex have faked their deaths.
Yeah,
and she's had a small little grave set up that details Rex's death and her lightsabers. She leaves there in order to further have the illusion that she is actually dead. Because you know, if she got her lightsabers back, why would she leave them? Especially with the Empire after her. But you know, in this scene, she also feels the fact that the Jedi are gone.
Mm-hmm.
She can't feel Anakin anymore in the Force. And so, you know, she runs.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that's essentially what, I don't really have anything to add because that's all that happens in that interlude.
Yeah.
But that's important information. We figure out that she's faked her death, so to a certain degree, the Empire is going to think she's dead.
Right.
Which is helpful to her. And she also fakes Rex's death because Rex was able to get that, you know, he's not brainwashed by Order 66. He was able to get the chip out and they just stage their own deaths and she leaves her lightsabers behind and they both decide, like, we're not going to contact each other anymore. We're just going to run off to the Outer Rim.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like how a lot of these interludes are almost like flashbacks and how well they tie in with what's going on with the present day story. One thing I do think is very good is, you know, there's what you said, six of them in here.
Yep.
I believe.
Yeah.
And they're not like, well, they're fairly evenly spaced. It's not like, you know, oh, we've had X amount of chapters. We need to have another interlude. No, they're very pertinent. The content in the interlude is very pertinent to what's going on in Ahsoka's story presently.
Yeah.
So I do appreciate that.
Yeah, they're impactful interludes.
Yeah.
So moving past that, you know, she and the farmers are kind of witnessing the Empire's slow invasion and, you know, cue the Trade Federation March.
Okay, yeah. Stop there.
But the Empire, like you said, you know, they're coming here to use the planet to farm something, and they're going to obviously enforce the people of Rada as cheap labor. You know, they kind of want to resist somehow, but they're not sure how. They're not a fighting culture. They don't really have weapons. But luckily, they do have an incredibly talented Clone Wars vet with them. I mean, they still don't know that. But Ahsoka is going to kind of help organize a somewhat more passive resistance where she kind of just encourages them to work really, really, really slow. You know, the slower we go, maybe the Empire will just realize this isn't worth it and just leave. So Ahsoka herself is trying to figure out, crap, how are we going to fight this Empire? Because she's also well aware, like, we can't just go toe to toe with them. Even if we could somehow take out this small garrison that first shows up, they're just going to send more and crush us into the dirt. You know, there's no combative way to win.
We can't overthrow them because that will only mean that we will be stomped out when the next wave comes. You know, they're not going to just show up here and expect us to, you know, do their work for them. They're going to wipe us out and then have someone else do the work. And simultaneously, while she's having the farmers work slowly, she's starting to gather, you know, food and equipment and things like that in case they need to have a place to fall back to. And she's using her caves, and she's found another cave system to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I go then to the third interlude? Go.
Yes.
So, and again, you know, and this is going to be impactful moving forward. So in this third interlude, it's pushed forward from after she's fleed Order 66, and she's kind of early on this the Beska planet, and she's with this, Fardy is the name of the character, his family. Mm-hmm. And she witnesses how one of his young daughters has force abilities. You know, she's a force sensitive child, and Ahsoka is going to feel guilt that she can't protect that child. Mm-hmm. And she flees that child without really having ever said anything to Fardy or the family. So she leaves that child vulnerable. And I think, again, that feeds into where our story is because Ahsoka is realizing, at least initially, I'm helpless against the Empire. Just like she was helpless with Fardy's daughter.
Right. And also, she's not going to make that mistake and run from Kaden and Miara. You know, she's going to make sure that she can keep them safe.
Yeah.
Since she failed Fardy's daughter, and that's what she has in her mind, she's failed her. You know, she's not going to make that same mistake again.
Yeah. Yeah. So, then they devise this plan to essentially kind of at least sabotage some of the Imperials, you know, forces. You know, it's not open combat, but just more of like sabotage. Make it look like it was an accident.
Right.
They're just gonna, you know, again, they're just like, they're just gonna pester them. You know.
Yeah. make things uncomfortable for the Empire to be there, and make them decide to leave of their own idea, so that life can go back to normal.
Yeah. But unfortunately for Ahsoka, some of the farmers, again, I don't remember all their names, but some of them have an alternative plan that they don't run by Ahsoka. Kaden's sister, Miara, apparently is very good at building bombs, you know, and the bombs that Ahsoka has her building are essentially bombs that'll just disable things. But one of the other farmers is having her on the side build these very destructive bombs. So they attempt this, essentially a more direct attack on the Imperial Fortress, which of course is easily, like, you know, foiled.
Right. Because
they don't know what the heck they're up against. And Ahsoka has to go in to rescue them.
Right.
And there's going to be a lot like, when that happens, Ahsoka finally fesses up. She says she's a veteran of the Clone Wars. She doesn't mention she was a Jedi. Still not yet. But she does reveal that she was a veteran of the Clone Wars, and that's why she has these innate skills.
Right. Right. I love the scene where, you know, she's figured out what's going on because Miara accidentally has one of her real bombs in with the sabotage bombs that they're supposed to be planting on these walkers. And Ahsoka sees it. And so as soon as they're done planting their, you know, doing their sabotage, they head back to Seldon's bar, which is where everyone else is, has been planning their second attack. And I love the scene where she confronts, I think it's Vartan is the the guy who's basically in charge of this other group. And the way she stares him down, and is able to basically say, "You've ruined everything." It was a really great moment for me. I loved that scene. So
But when she goes back, because I think it's Caden's been captured.
Did she get captured here?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, she does, because she goes back to help Kaden. She's forced to use the Force. And when she uses the Force, her cover is literally blown.
Right. No, Kaden doesn't get captured here. She rescues everybody, except for like the brother of one of the other characters,
who does get killed. Right.
Yeah, he gets killed.
Yeah.
But yeah, her cover's blown.
Yeah. And there, you know, there are direct consequences to her using the Force. So, you know, Jenneth, again, the villain we don't really care about, but he sees it on like a, you know, holo recording and immediately reports it up the chain of command. And now we know, again, this is a good storytelling point. We know things are not going to be easy for Rada now. They have a potential Jedi fugitive on their hands.
Right.
So that's just going to up Imperial presence. And I think probably for Ahsoka, she's probably kind of pissed too, because she wouldn't have had to done this had they not deviated from her plan.
Exactly.
So I think Ahsoka's feeling a certain sense of anger over that. But conversely too, that whole group is, except for Kaden, is angry at her for hiding her identity, right? Like, she finally says like her real name. She tells them her name's Ahsoka. She was once a Jedi. And they're, you know, the majority of the group, Miara especially, is like furious with her. They feel like they've been lied to.
Right.
But, you know, Ahsoka, she was doing what she thought was right. You know, she lied to them because she didn't want them to know that they had a Jedi in their hands, because that's going to make things worse for you.
Right. Exactly. And unfortunately, because of the situation that she's been put in due to the actions of these farmers, she has to leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, she's basically helps them, you know, get a little bit set up in the caves that she's been stocking and everything. But she has to go.
Yeah. No, this is where she gets captured. She was captured there the first time because she gets tortured.
No, she gets captured by the sixth brother. when he arrives.
No, that's later, though. But don't forget, Kaden gets captured during that first failed attempt, and that's why Ahsoka goes back to get her. And that's
where
Kaden is, like, brutally tortured.
You're right.
And, you know, she uses the Force to help Kaden get out of there, right? She, like, lifts her up through a window. Further evidence of her using the Force. But that's why Ahsoka goes back, is because this thing is, like, fallen apart. She goes back to help some of them. She can't get Kaden, though. Kaden gets captured. She gets out with who she can, and then she goes back for Kaden on her own.
Right.
And Kaden is, like, you know, succumbed to this brutal torture device. And, you know, Ahsoka goes back to get her. And it's after she rescues Kaden that she decides, it's time for me to leave.
Yeah. And Kaden further says that she should, because the Imperial officer who was interrogating her, his eyes were just, like, going insane when he wanted, looking for information on the Jedi. You know, he wanted to kill her simply because of who she was. You know, she was a Jedi. And he was going to do anything to find her.
Yeah. So at least Kaden supports her leaving. Mm-hmm. But she promises to come back. So she leaves them with this hope that somehow she'll still help figure this all out for them.
Right.
Then we go into our fourth interlude,
mm-hmm.
which takes place essentially right before the Clone Wars movie. And it's essentially right before, or it's right after Anakin has been knighted.
Yep.
And this is kind of told from Anakin's perspective. And I really like there's this part in there where it talks about how he feels this profound sense of freedom, where he can finally, like, be this Jedi Knight that he dreamed of as a kid. And there's a great callback to the Phantom Menace scene, right, where he's looking up at the stars and, you know, I'm going to visit them all, right? Anakin is just feeling like, yes, I'm doing what I set out to do, right? Kind of those, I think to me, a real life experience is like when you go to college, like specifically like graduate school or something like that, something more specific and towards the end of like, oh, I want to have this type of job. And sometimes when you're during the training process, during the schooling process, you're like, oh my God, I just want to be done. I just want to be doing that now.
Right.
Right. It's kind of that feeling of like when graduation day hits, you've got that first job and you're just like, finally, like I can do what I know I'm supposed to do.
Right. Exactly.
Anakin's just reveling in that feeling of, you know, finally I'm a Jedi Knight and I can, you know, I'm unencumbered. I don't have a master, and like, oh, Obi-Wan already wants another Padawan, but no, sir, not for me. You know, like,
right.
So
but he's like, but you know, this is a bad place for a new Padawan.
Yeah.
But you know, Obi-Wan's the best of teachers, and I'll be around to help keep the Padawan safe if Obi-Wan wants it. You know, he's already thinking like this is going to be Obi-Wan's Padawan and we're going to, you know, all have to work together to keep the Padawan safe because this is a dangerous place for a new Padawan. And then, of course, we know how that ends up.
Right.
That's not Obi-Wan's Padawan.
Yeah. Yeah. So interesting what would have happened had Anakin not been given a Padawan.
Mm.
I don't know. I don't think anything would have been drastically different. Because I think isn't the point of kind of giving him the Padawan is to, in some way, rein him in?
A bit, yeah. It's supposed to, you know, give him more, you know, a responsibility to help him grow and become more mature.
Right.
So.
Then we flash back to the present and we start a new story here. We get to meet Jimmy Smits, I mean Bail Organa. you know, and... Where we meet him is you know, he's a senator in the Imperial Senate, and like we all already knew, but he's already started to organize this formal rebellion under, you know, I mean, secretly, of course. And what comes to his attention is what happened on Rata.
Yes.
You know, this force sensitive person. And he's intrigued that there's a Jedi survivor. And his immediate thought is, I need this person, right? Like I need to recruit them for the rebellion.
You're right. I need to find them. He doesn't know where to look because, you know, in all likelihood, this Jedi is long gone. But, you know, he's got to find some way to track this person down.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also like how, you know, he's, you know, looking over these reports with his daughter, in the room.
Yeah. Yeah.
Little baby Leia.
Little baby Leia.
Who's giggling and laughing at the bubbles in the aquarium.
yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, because Leia is going to be about a year and a half old now.
Exactly.
It's cute.
It's really kind of neat to see that sort of relationship there between the father and daughter that Bail is having with Leia.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then, you know, we go from Bail. So essentially two big characters recognize what happened on Rada. Mm-hmm. And they both want her for very different reasons. So first we get Bail. Bail has good intentions. He wants to find who this Jedi is, recruit them to the rebellion. But then we go to the sixth brother, you know, one of the Inquisitors. And he's on the Beska investigating the potential force use of a child when he hears about what happened on Rada. And we get, you know, the sixth brother is obviously a very aggressive person. They're bored by this assignment. They don't want to just be investigating children. He wants to go eradicate Jedi. So this is a great opportunity for him. But what's interesting is why the hell are they taking Jedi, right? Like, I mean, we saw a plot like this in the Clone Wars where Sidious was having, you know, Force-sensitive children captured.
Right.
The question is what for? I mean, my assumption, Jason, is that these are all future Inquisitors, right? Like, I don't think he's looking to make a Sith army or something. He's very much so an adherent to the rule of two. So what do you think these children are for? Do you think it's just for the purpose of being Inquisitors?
I feel Palpatine's got a multitude of plans. You know, we see that he's a master planner, you know, during the prequels. Of course, you know, he gets a bit complacent during the original trilogy. But with all these children, I feel like some of them are to become Inquisitors. Other Inquisitors are former Jedi that they turn. Obviously, we see that one of the Temple Guards becomes the Grand Inquisitor in Rebels. But I feel like he's probably also got he mentions in that Clone Wars story that these Force-sensitive children will be basically his eyes and ears, you know, spying for him across the galaxy. And so I feel like he's, you know, those that show enough promise will become Inquisitors. Those who don't will become other tools for him.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, kind of like in, Game of Thrones, how Varys has a group of children as his, spies. But anyway, that's a Game of Thrones thing. Yeah. So now, you know, now you're going to have these two big characters again from the overarching story converging onto Ahsoka. And what's so funny is the sixth brother leaves the Beska and Ahsoka arrives. You know, she goes back to where she was before. And she's kind of going to open up a little bit to Fardy's family a bit. You know, she's going to be a little more honest with him about who she is. And the children all love her. Apparently Fardy has a big family. You know, the kids all love her. And this youngest one, Hadala, I think is how you say her name.
Yeah.
She talks to Ahsoka about this shadow that was there, which clearly is the sixth brother.
Right.
You know, she doesn't know that, but she talks about how there was this shadow there, like kind of haunting everything. So she
kind of kept herself hidden.
Yeah.
From it.
Yeah. And, you know, so Ahsoka is now like her spidey sense is tingling. She knows there's something up in the Force world. And Ahsoka has made this decision now for herself that she's done just kind of staying hidden. She's going to, at least a small way, start, you know, kind of Robin Hooding it, if you will, right? She's going to start doing like good deeds for people, at least just kind of in a quiet fashion. She's never going to let people really see her. She's never going to tell them who she is, but she wants to start helping people. And she kind of gets that connection through Fardy. You know, he's going to have her basically helping do smuggling runs for him.
Yeah. Ahsoka's always like, you know, he doesn't seem – some of this business that he has me doing doesn't seem perfectly legal. I'm not going to ask any questions about it because I don't want to make a fuss. But she does notice that when supplies or whatever she's delivering arrives, people are very, very grateful.
Yeah.
And when she's out on these smuggling runs, she finds other people who need help, and she helps them.
Yeah. Yeah. So it kind of, it works out for her. She figures at least this is a way she can fight the Empire, but it's a very solitary way of doing it, which is going to be important for later. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting too, though, is she likes this though. She's enjoying kind of being the hero again. I mean, that's almost one of the lines right out of the book, is something about how she likes being the hero again. You know, this, you know, again, at the beginning of the novel, she's somebody looking for a purpose. She's starting to at least find one for herself. You know, she started to make one on Radha, but she had to run away. So now she's doing it in this way, you know, and that is so consistent with the Ahsoka character of the Clone Wars. You know, she was always about like doing good and helping people and being active. You know, one of my favorite episodes with Ahsoka is the one where her lightsaber gets stolen. What's the master that she pales around with that whole episode?
Oh, Tara Sanube.
Yeah, I love that episode, right? Because Ahsoka is just like Anakin in the sense of, right, like, patience, use the Force, think, right? Like,
right.
Sometimes you have to just slow down.
And, you know, and that's Ahsoka's character throughout the whole Clone Wars. And to a certain degree, that's who she's always going to be. That's part of her personality, right? You can't take a high-strung person and make them just like a laid-back, quiet person. That's just not who somebody is.
Right.
But Ahsoka here is finally like, okay, like I can do something here. I can be active and I can have a purpose for it.
Yeah.
And that's really important.
Unfortunately,
yes,
her good deeds do not go unnoticed.
They don't.
By both people that we've seen before.
Yeah.
The sixth brother notices it, and he's like, ah, this has got to be the Jedi that was here on Radha. I know. I'll make her friends suffer, so she'll have to come back.
Yep. It's very Empire Strikes Back Vader.
Oh, very.
It's
extremely.
Like, yeah.
This is just a playbook out of the Sith handbook, you know. Sith manual, you know, lesson number 3, you know, when you're wanting somebody, hurt their friends and they'll come running.
Yep.
But thankfully, it also does not go unnoticed by Bail Organa.
Yes.
He sees this as very fortuitous because he believes this is also the Jedi that was on Radha.
Yeah.
And so he sends a couple of people to go out and find her.
Yep. But before any of that transpires, we get another interlude, our fourth interlude, which is all about Obi-Wan.
Yes.
And this is by far my favorite of the interludes. They're all amazing, but this just happens to be my favorite. And he's settling into life on Tatooine.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking to, it starts by him just talking about kind of how he's feeling old. And he wonders if it has something to do with the climate. And I know this is something really weird to say, but I think it kind of makes sense if you think about it. At the end of episode 3, Obi-Wan is probably only like 40, you know. And then at the start of episode 4, he's only in his early 60s, but he looks old, right? Like
right.
Ben Kenobi looks very old. And I like that that's in there. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but my immediate reading is like, yep, there's something about being a hermit on Tatooine that would age you. And that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. All the, you know, the abrasive sand and everything, coupled with the fact that he's got two sons.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Jason.
Hmm.
I don't like sand. It's rough and irritating, and it gets everywhere.
Gets everywhere. It really does. we don't want it. Never mind. But yes, he's settling into his life on Tatooine. He feels old, and he's got a secret with him.
He does.
Anakin's lightsaber.
Yeah. And Obi-Wan's character here, again, it's just very consistent with what we would expect it to be. He is someone who's kind of riddled with guilt. He feels awful for what happened, for the order falling apart, and even personally responsible for what happened to Anakin. And I think it's really great that we get that input about how he visited Shmi's grave to apologize, right? He goes to Shmi's grave to apologize for losing Anakin.
Yeah.
And he never even met Shmi, you know?
No.
But it's pretty clear that Anakin probably talked about her a lot. So he probably had a very good sense of who she was as a person.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to her grave to apologize. I think that's just so profound. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah, it really is.
Makes me wonder what they did with Shmi's grave for Luke. Like, did Luke know Shmi Skywalker was buried there?
I feel like once Luke was old enough to start asking questions, they kind of...
Maybe they said it was Beru's mother.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. But anyway. I think what's important in this spoiler. Well, it's about to be a spoiler. What's important though in this interlude is that he is kind of like Ahsoka early in the novel. He's struggling in the Force, right? It's very dark every time he goes into meditation.
Yes.
But he finally has this initial contact with Qui-Gon.
Yes.
And Qui-Gon tells him to let go.
Yeah.
And you know, this is the first seeds being planted for Obi-Wan learning from Qui-Gon mm-hmm. about eternal life.
Right.
And we learned at the end of that interlude Obi-Wan's character is a character who's put his entire hope into the future. Right? Like, that's why he is going to stay on Tatooine. And again, this is, to me, my argument as to why I don't want to see Obi-Wan leave Tatooine.
Exactly. I was about to go there.
Yeah, because it's like... That's so perfect. Like, that is his purpose. He has found his purpose. It's to look after Luke, and his hope is in the future. His fight is not now. That's not his fight. And we're going to learn later who that fight is for right now, which, again, this novel does a great job of doing. But that is not Obi-Wan's fight. Obi-Wan's fight is in the future. So, again, like, the idea that we could have Kenobi leave Tatooine for a short mission somewhere, it's not consistent with who his character is. And I really like that they seem to reinforce that here.
Yes, exactly, exactly. His mission is to ensure the future of Luke Skywalker, and he places hope that Luke is going to be the one who helps restore order to the galaxy. He is not going to abandon that at all or leave it. There is so much conviction within him about this, and so much guilt about his perceived failure of what happened with Anakin, that there is no way he's going to jeopardize anything when it comes to Luke Skywalker by leaving.
Yeah.
I can't see it happening. I really can't. I can't see him making any, familial connections anywhere on Tatooine either, especially, there was Satine. Maul killed her, but that's probably the closest he ever got to the idea of a family. And there's no way he's going to be sitting out in the middle of the desert with this mandate on his shoulders, and he's going to start a family as a crazy old wizard in the middle of the desert.
Yeah. Yeah. Not going to happen.
So, sorry. Kenobi is not related to Rey.
No.
There's no way he abandoned celibacy. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, again, that's not his character.
No.
And it would do a huge disservice to his character to have any of that stuff go down.
Right.
But with, again, that interlude ends with kind of this message of hope for the future. And then we go into Kaden's character. We finally kind of go back to what's going on Rada. And she is someone who also has hope. She has hope in Ahsoka. Her hope is that Ahsoka will return to make this all better, because they're kind of being hunted down now by the Empire.
Yep. And the sixth brother in particular.
Yeah.
He's shown back up, and he's not very kind, shall we say.
Yeah. So, so the sixth brother kind of figures out where they are. We have this really kind of like a really cool scene, albeit, kind of brutal. The sixth brother finds them hiding in the caves. And he knows who Kaden is, and he calls for her to come out. I mean, this is this scene is very like, what is it? The three little pigs or whatever, or else I'll huff and puff and blow your caves down. That's just kind of what I was thinking during that scene is he's standing outside these caves saying, come out or I will bring the caves down on top of you type of a thing. Right. Like,
right.
And they're like ready to, Kaden's like, I have to go. Like, I'm not going to put you all at risk because he just wants me. Let me go. She's found a sense of nobility and heroism, if you will, in light of her contact with Ahsoka. So Ahsoka's had a very profound impact on who Kaden is.
Yes.
Heroes beget heroes, I guess. so, she comes out to him And the others try to like attack the sixth brother, and he just brutally kills all of them.
All of them.
They're all dead.
It's not good at all.
Yeah.
And of course he takes Kaden capture. Miara has been stunned so that she can't get involved because Kaden wants to make sure Miara is safe. So Miara is basically the only one left alive that's not either subjugated by the Empire still working in the fields or captured or dead.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And of course, unfortunately, Ahsoka has had to leave the employ of the Fardy family because her actions have not gone unnoticed. She does learn that Fardy is a rebel sympathizer, and a lot of the missions he was sending her on were in opposition to the Empire. And she reveals her beliefs about his daughter, Hedala.
Mm-hmm.
And he promises that they will watch over her and keep an eye on her. And so while she leaves again, she feels like a positive difference has been made there and that she's done her job.
Yeah. Yeah. So she essentially is going to go off, and finally Bail's able to meet her. You know, he gets her in, and she has the first people she meets, Jason.
R2-D2.
Hey.
I love this because we see throughout the book how she's talking to R2, who's not there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's talking to herself, but she's attributing it, well, she's actually talking to R2, but he's not actually there. And these two people that Bail has sent out to track her down don't really get to, you know, talk with her before she knocks them out and starts exploring their ship because they, you know, use a tractor beam to capture her ship in a rather abrupt manner. But she runs across R2 there, who gives her enough information to tell her what's going on and then scrubs all of her visit on the ship from the security cameras so that she can make her own introductions with Bail Organa.
Although R2 doesn't to do all of them. He does leave one little image. So R2 kind of plays both of them.
Yes. Yes, he does.
R2 plays Ahsoka and Bail.
Right.
I don't think he's not playing them, but he's leaving enough for Ahsoka to feel secure to leave so it can be on her terms, but he's leaving at least a tiny little scrap for Bail to know that it's worth pursuing.
Exactly, because when Bail looks over the security footage, there's one shot where you can see like her montrals, her horns, over the top of some storage boxes in the cargo hold or something like that. And he goes, he recognizes the markings and goes, it's Ahsoka. So he gets excited and then finds her in his office.
Yep.
On the Tanna 4.
Yeah. And of course, Bail's objective here is to just recruit her to the rebellion.
Yes.
And what's interesting, though, and I'm curious what your take is on this, is Bail is mulling over what to share with Ahsoka, right? Like, he knows that Anakin has fallen. He knows that he's now Darth Vader. He knows about Luke and Leia. He knows that Obi-Wan's alive. He knows that Yoda's alive. But he chooses not to share any of that with her, which is very interesting, and it's not explained why.
Right.
My suspicion is, again, he understands that Obi-Wan has a purpose, and if he tells Ahsoka about her, she's going to probably try to go, you know, get involved with that. And maybe it could just – and also, remember, Bail's a politician too. I mean, that's who he is essentially. Maybe it's also just the less people know, the better, right?
Yeah.
You know, if Ahsoka is somehow broken down or something – and I don't think he thinks that that could happen, but just even having the potential of that information being out with one more person – is just one more person to break, you know? So that's my suspicion, is maybe it's not so much of a distrust of Ahsoka. It's just more of really protecting that secrecy.
Exactly. Because the only people who know the full story at the end of Revenge of the Sith, Obi-Wan, Yoda, and Bail. They are the only ones that know. Yoda's gone out into exile on Dagobah. Obi-Wan is on Tatooine, keeping an eye on Luke, and he's got his own job, you know, hiding in plain sight, basically, as an Imperial senator, watching over Leia. And so I think you're right. You know, it really is a matter of the less people who know this secret, the better. We've already, you know, I can trust Yoda not to give it up. I can trust Obi-Wan not to give it up. I can trust myself not to give it up. It's not that he doesn't trust Ahsoka, but he just doesn't want that information to spread any farther.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So there's one thing in there, and I don't exactly remember the context of this either, but I just think it's worth mentioning because it's interesting, is when Bail is, again, just kind of mulling over everything he knows.
Mm-hmm.
He suspects that Ahsoka knew about Anakin and Padme.
Yeah.
I don't – and I think, again, that's something we as fans have always assumed that, you know, especially when Ahsoka leaves the Order at the end of season 5, you know, mm-hmm. you know, I understand more than you know. And she says, I know, right? Like the way she says it, she gets it. I don't know if she knows that they're married, but she knows that they have an intimate relationship that he's not supposed to have.
Right.
So, you know, I just think it's cool that that's brought in here that – I think, again, this is Bail being a politician, weighing, you know, what does she know? What doesn't she know? What should she know? What shouldn't she know? And I just thought it was really neat to, again, make that connection of, like, Ahsoka definitely knew about Anakin and Padme.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So, but, you know, it comes to Ahsoka's knowledge, thanks to Bail, that there is these Inquisitors out there. And this Inquisitor has showed up on Rata, and he's captured her friend. Mm-hmm. She immediately recognizes that's the shadow that Hadala had been feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And she makes a decision. It's a very Revenge of the Sith scene, like, destroy the Inquisitors. We must.
Right.
And, you know, she makes this decision of, I'm going to return. I'm going to eradicate this Inquisitor, and I'm going to free my friend.
Exactly. Exactly. But she has, you know, she acquires the help of Bail in this, but there's one thing that she has to do first.
Damn right.
She's got to create her lightsabers.
Mm-hmm.
She builds the two casings, basically, but they're missing the key element. Of course, that being the crystal. And I like this little scene. First of all, we get the interlude.
Yeah.
From the crystals.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even before that interlude, Ahsoka has a dream.
Yes.
On Ilum, where she's getting those crystals. So, exactly. And I think, again, interesting that it's a dream. That's the dream kind of confirms to her, it's time to build these, it's time to fight.
Right.
And then, yes, we get our fifth interlude, which is all about kyber crystals.
Yeah. It is really kind of fascinating.
I love it. Yeah.
You know, and it's very, you know, vague in the sense that, you know, this is from, you know, the perspective of these immovable objects, these crystals that, you know, are attuned to the Force. But it's, you know, it basically tells how the Jedi found them, how the Jedi have been coming, you know, with these pilgrimages and, you know, how the crystals, you know, are identified for each Jedi. But then it also talks about how basically the Empire has come.
Yeah.
To Ilum.
Yeah. What's cool too is we learn a little bit about dark side crystals. They're just, they're corrupted crystals, right? They're not, they don't hear the song, right? I really like that, right? And we learned that in one of the Clone Wars episodes, I think in The Gathering, you know, we learn that, you know, each crystal has like a song for that only its hearer can hear, you know. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that intimacy of that connection to this weapon is your life. You know, in a sense, it really is. There's this intimacy a Jedi has with their kyber crystal and therefore their lightsaber. And what's so neat is Sith don't hear those ever, right? They take kyber crystals from Jedi and then corrupt them, and that's what turns them red. It does,
because the crystal bleeds.
Exactly. And that's so cool, because in the past, you know, Legends had us just, okay, there were you know, blue, green, and red kyber crystals. That's what made the color of the lightsaber. But now we get this new canon, which I think is immensely cooler, which is, that's, you know, again, it's so cool. The crystal bleeds because it's been corrupted.
Yeah.
It's been changed. So, like, that's just such a cool little, like, interjection.
Yeah.
And we also learn in that interlude about how these places, i.e. Ilum, i.e. Jedha, have become holy places. So again, like, you know, when I first read that novel, if you've read that novel without any knowledge of Rogue One, it's just kind of a passing piece of information. But now it's like, it's very clear that that's making a connection to what's going to be going on in Rogue One on Jedha.
Oh, yeah.
I love that interlude. It's really cool.
And Ilum is being plundered.
Yes. And so will Jedha, I'm assuming.
Yeah. And, you know, Ahsoka does make a quick trip to Ilum. She doesn't land there, but she does see the extent that the Empire has plundered it. I mean, it basically, there's, you know, entire chunks of the crust are visible now from underneath where the snow and ice had been before. You know, it's looks terrible.
Mm-hmm.
The planet just looks sick.
Yeah.
But you know, the crystals will wait, you know, hidden away.
Yeah.
And
what I like too is when Ahsoka leaves for this mission to go back. Well, I mean, again, she plans to go to Ilum first and then back to Rada. She leaves with this realization of kind of how this fight against the Empire is going to go. It's going to be slow, and it's going to require patience, right? It's this understanding that this Empire is going to take a while to topple. It's not going to happen overnight. It's going to be the long game, and you need people like Bail to help you see that. Bail is someone who's going to be able to understand that this is a long game, and you have to play it a certain way. This is not the Clone Wars.
No. No, it's going to be a much longer, more drawn out, more, at least at first, secretive resistance.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I love this at this point in the novel too, where Ahsoka's character she has kind of this profound, meditation experience of the Force kind of late in the novel before she gets back to Rada, where she finds that connection again. And remember what Yoda says, a Jedi strength flows from the Force.
Yes.
Ahsoka has found herself connected to what's most important to her again. And she trusts it again. She's trusting the Force, and she trusts herself. She trusts her own instincts, we're told. And
she hears a song.
Yeah. And it's on Rada. And she knows that the Force is guiding her again. Like, the Force has a purpose. And again, like, that's what I think this, at the end of the day, that's what this novel's kind of all about, is helping, you know, is the story of how does Ahsoka find a new purpose. And her purpose now is, and you know, in a very concrete present way, go to Rada. But in a grander scheme too, it's just you are to be with the rebellion now, right? She doesn't have to have this fight alone. She can join something bigger than herself and welcome the risk of attachment again, right? The sense of attachment to caring about people.
Exactly. And so she returns to Rada, finds Miara, and finds out exactly what's going on. The Sixth Brother is, of course, holding Kaden hostage in order to make Ahsoka come to him. And so she does.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the really cool scenes in the book as well, is there's this initial confrontation between Ahsoka and the Sixth Brother. And the song that she's hearing from her crystals are the crystals inside his saber.
Yep.
And so using the Force, she touches the lightsaber, causing it to shatter. And it blows up in his face, basically, killing him, which was really cool.
Yeah.
And she takes the crystals, purifies them, and puts them in her lightsabers, which is what makes them white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, that is so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm wondering, and I, you know, there's nothing to back this up, but I'm wondering, since the Darksiders basically have to steal crystals, I'm wondering if the sixth brother stole the crystals from her old lightsabers and then she got them back this time.
Ooh, that's cool.
I mean, there's nothing to back that up.
Sure.
You know, it would be really convenient and really coincidental if that was the case, but it's a neat idea.
Yeah, I like that. Cool idea, Jason. yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, that showdown, right? Like, I think for me, I suspected that she would go back, find her crystals, and then have a duel with the sixth brother. Mm-hmm. But I think it's so cool because we learn kind of that these Inquisitors, they're like Ahsoka is going to explain later, like they're not that well trained. They just kind of rely on brute strength. Like they're not like they wouldn't be much of a match for the typical Jedi, right? Like that's why she's able to defeat him without even a weapon.
Right.
And you know, I think that's just really cool that, you know, these, like the Grand Inquisitor and like what are the other two Inquisitors?
Seventh Sister
and the fifth brother, right? Like they definitely put up a good fight against Kanan and Ezra, but these are also like, they're not premier Jedi themselves.
No.
So, you know, in the heyday, and that's why like when Ahsoka takes them on, you know, in season two, she just like kicks their butts.
Oh yeah.
Which is awesome.
They were no challenge for her.
Yeah, exactly. So I just think it's really cool that she shows up. And again, in a certain way, kind of similar to what happens with Rey at the end of Force Awakens, right? She's channeling the Force, and that's how she can defeat Kylo, right? It's not necessarily Rey's pure skill. It's not. It's the Force working and moving through her. Same with Ahsoka kind of here. She's not just fighting using her own skills. She's fighting with the Force. The Force is her strength. That's where it's flowing from. And that's why that's so cool. She touches them and they just, I can see that, right? I can see that on screen, her touching them and they just blow up in his face. And she takes them back and purifies them. And she even says that to Bail later, like towards the end of the novel, like, you know, I changed their nature.
Yes.
And which is also kind of, I don't know if this is intentional at all, but kind of looking forward to Darth Vader. Right? Like he's been deluded, the good person, he's been corrupted, but he can be changed, right? Like his nature also can be changed.
Oh, that's cool. That's a cool connection. I didn't make that one.
Well, you opened the door with your cool connection before it.
Oh, well,
we're a team, Jason.
There's a reason why we podcast together.
Damn right.
But of course, now that she has her lightsabers, Ahsoka fully steps into who she is. Rescues Kaden, and right on time, Bail's assistant shows up in the form of Captain Antilles and the Tantive III,
right?
As well as some other ships,
A-wings,
yes, and some other larger ships, and they make a full evacuation of the farmers of Rada.
Yep. Yeah. So, you know, it's so cool that they do that. I mean, I think it's important that Rada's not a huge world.
Right.
It'd be kind
of
hard to.
It's a small moon.
Yeah, right. Like, imagine coming to Earth and being like, okay, everybody on board.
Right. There's only the one, you know, civilization, you know, city.
Yeah.
You know, it's if you can call it a city.
It makes me wonder, you know, this is a total side tangent, but worth noting. In the Star Wars galaxy, my guess is that planets aren't very big. Like, they're all like, they all tend to be one ecosystem.
Right.
We have desert planets. We have, you know, ice planets.
Right.
But
I'm guessing most of them are not much bigger than Earth.
Yeah.
You know, maybe more Mars sized. You know, places like Coruscant are probably bigger. But I'm doubting there's many of these planets are the size of Jupiter.
Yeah, right. So maybe we could maybe Bespin. It's a gas giant.
It is. That's true.
But yeah. Anyway, though, end of the story, right? Like Bail shows up, rescues them, and kind of the conclusion of the novel is the farmers of Rada want to join the rebellion.
Yes.
Like they want in. And I think that's important to show again when this is where the rebellion is going to come from. Just everyday folks who get fed up with the oppression of the Empire, right? Like, you know, that's the story of human history. If you think about it, our own like world history is this is when rebellions happen, is when people get fed up with a tyrannical government or, you know, an oppressive dictator. They rise up. You know, it's based on that experience, and that's who these people of Rada are. They're just simple farmers who've firsthand experienced the corruption and cruelty of the empire, and they want to fight it.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. Not only do they do, but Ahsoka does. And yeah. She basically dictates to Bail what her position is going to be in his rebel cell here. Mm-hmm. She's like, you need someone to be in charge of your intelligence gathering branch here. I'm going to do that. And this is where she comes up with the name of Fulcrum.
Mm-hmm.
And Bail goes, all right, welcome aboard. So
yeah. Yeah. You know, so something I want to mention, you know, kind of, again, this novel, like, just ends so well. And that scene at the end, though, where Ahsoka and Bail are, you know, putting together how she's going to fit into the rebellion and the people of Rada are going to fit into the rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
Bail kind of makes it clear to her that they're the middle road, right? Like, and I like that. Ahsoka's often described herself that way when, like, discussing, like, Anakin and Obi-Wan. Like, Obi-Wan was always so passive and thoughtful, and Anakin was so, like, aggressive and, like,
right.
and you know, like, acted off the seat of his pants. But Ahsoka was somewhere in the middle, right? Like, she,
right.
Both of them rubbed off on her. And that's kind of where they see their role. And again, this is kind of going back to, you know, an earlier complaint of mine about something we were seeing in Rebels, which now I've completely amended and admitted why I think I was wrong and why I like this so much, is Ahsoka and Bail realize that in the will of the Force, and that's not the language used, but that's the language I'm using. Mm-hmm. In the will of the Force, they are the ones who are going to make up the present fight to the Empire, right? Obi-Wan is the future. And Ahsoka here, like, refers to how Barriss Offrey was kind of fighting the past.
Right.
But their fight is the present. And I think that's where the Force is still useful, right? Like, the Force isn't just going to stay dormant until Luke and Leia are old enough to make a difference. It's going to use people like Bail and Ahsoka and Ezra and Kanan to build this rebellion, to make it poised to do a difference. But what they're going to need, right? Like, I think, like, the final, like, shaker upper that you need is you do need the Luke and Leia characters, right? Like,
right.
They're the kind of final straw.
You need that catalyst.
Exactly. But you need a base, you need a foundation. And that's where Ahsoka and Bail come into play. They're going to build that foundation.
Exactly.
So, so for,
we end the book.
Oh, real quick. Before we get to the final interlude.
Okay.
I think just the last thing I want to say about Ahsoka, because the book is called Ahsoka, the novel ends with her character going through this profound transformation.
Yes.
The beginning of the book is she is somebody who's alone, who feels mm-hmm. disconnected, and doesn't know what the heck her purpose is. The book ends with her again very clearly asserting, I am Ahsoka Tano, right? Like a Jedi, you know? Like,
right.
Not necessarily a Jedi, but she has claimed her identity again and has found a purpose. So in a way, this book is, it's like the redemption of Ahsoka. It's Ahsoka finding her place in the world again. And I think that's that's why I love this book. It's such a great character story.
Yeah. She was, you know, sort of lost and adrift in a sea of, you know, not knowing who she was and what her purpose was. Now she knows who she is. She's got her purpose, and she's got something to work towards.
Yeah.
And she is a much, much stronger character for it now. You know, this was a great, great journey to go on with Ahsoka.
Yeah.
And I really like the way that it took us on that journey with her, and that this was the story we were told. Because it's a really important one.
Mm-hmm.
Because after Order 66, I mean, obviously she's going to feel lost, alone, unconnected, without, you know, someone, without a purpose, without a cause, mm-hmm. almost. And now she's found all that.
Yeah. Yeah. But the final sixth interlude.
Mm-hmm.
And we meet the Grand Inquisitor.
Yes.
And he shows up on Rada and notices kind of the aftermath of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And he's impressed. He's impressed with what Ahsoka was able to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And he leaves to say, I'm going to go report this to Lord Vader. There's another Jedi survivor. Yeah. Right. So again, like the book ends. This is, I think, what's really important to the story is where we are chronologically in the story is if we had just ended with Ahsoka, I think to some degree that'd been great, right? It's a great ending to the novel. Like, here's this character that has gone through this tremendous growth. She's committed herself to the rebellion. The rebellion is going to rise up. But the book ends with the reality of what still exists in the galaxy. You right. still have these Inquisitors. And more than that, you've got Darth Vader to deal with.
Yes.
So I like that the book ends on kind of, I don't want to say a sour note, but just on the note of like, there's still a huge threat. Like, yes, the rebellion, they fought really hard to accomplish very little, but it was a small yeah. victory. But my God, is it an uphill battle.
Right, right. And basically what that last interlude is like a post-credit scene in a Marvel movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, exactly.
It's like, yes, we did it. We're good. And then it's got that post-credit scene of, you know, the end of Guardians of the Galaxy where Thanos is like, all right, if you want something done right, you have to do it yourself. And you're like, oh, crap, you know. So yeah. Basically, that's kind of what happened.
Right.
But yeah, it's a great way to end the book. It was a great journey for Ahsoka, but that was a great way to end the book because it contextualizes everything that's just happened.
Yep.
It's like, yes, this was a huge victory for Ahsoka, but there's a lot bigger stuff going on that she's going to have to deal with.
Yep. Oh, man. Great book.
Yes.
Out of 5 stars, how many do you give it?
Oh, at least 4, maybe 4.5.
Yeah.
It's not a perfect book, but it's a really good one. And I'm someone who likes, you know, a lot of my books. I like the macrocosm of the galaxy.
Okay.
So, you know, getting
it's
books
a little
that
too zoomed in for you.
It's very zoomed in, but I liked it. I liked mm-hmm. it. And the way that it was written and the way that the pacing of it kept it from getting, you know, so bogged down for me. Because I liked seeing everything that's going on. You know, that's just a personal preference of mine. I like to see all of the cogs going at once. Mm-hmm. And we're focusing in on one cog, that being Ahsoka this time. But the way that the book was written is it didn't feel like it was, you know, that isolated from the rest of the galaxy for me. Yeah. Particularly when we get people like Bail showing up and, you know, glimpses of the rebellion he's starting to form. So, but yeah, I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5.
Yeah. I'd give it a 4.3. and like you said, you know, it's not a perfect book. And to me, the only real thing missing is good supporting characters. They're not bad again. They're just, I don't really care about most of the side characters. I really like Ahsoka's story, obviously, which is the main crux of the story. I liked the sixth brother, but I wish we'd gotten a little bit more of him and instead of like Jeneth is kind of a throwaway character. But yeah, that's my only real critique is, and that stupid Kroken game or Kraken, whatever the heck it's called. I know it's based on some Canadian game, right? Like that was when E.K. Johnson was on the Star Wars show on StarWars.com. She mentioned, you know, I think there's like 5 Canadian references like hidden in the novel, and that's one of them. So we'll have to ask Mike Cohen if he could pick up on the other ones. But it's based on some game and that's really popular in Canada. I didn't care about those scenes. Like they really get into the rules of that game. I'm like, I don't care. I don't care. You're wasting space. It's so minimal that I don't care. But yeah, I mean, if you've listened through this whole episode and you haven't read the book, obviously we just spoiled the whole thing. But if you're like, man, I still think I want to read it. I highly recommend reading it. It's amazing.
Yes. Yes, so, definitely.
And I'll say this. I mean, I've read it twice in the matter of a month and a half. And the second time through, I actually enjoyed it more, I think. I did skip some of the parts I didn't like going through the second time because I knew I wasn't missing. I knew I could skip without missing anything.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's a great novel.
It is. It is very good.
So, man, we went a little long there. That's all right, though.
We did.
I took too many notes, Jason. Damn it. Oh, well. But before we go, we did want to announce a new poll that we're going to start. It's going to be a new series of polls. And yes. Before we even announce that, though, we've actually kind of scheduled out the next few episodes of ours. So we want to give you a look ahead to what to expect. So next week we'll be recording. We'll continue in our act series, if you will. So we're on to act two of A New Hope in our next series of that. So we'll expect that next week. Mm-hmm. And the week after that, which is the week of Thanksgiving, we want to be thankful to you guys, our Larians, who are always awesome with this show. And again, encourage you to write in any questions you'd like to hear us discuss on the show. And this is specifically to the folks that still have questions lingering from episode 200.
Yes.
We are going to nail those out first.
And then anything else that you guys want to send in, we'll start working our way through those as well.
Exactly. So, so not next week's episode, but in 2 weeks, we're going to do a Larian response episode again. So if you have any questions you want to write in or be thinking about, you've got 2 weeks to do that. So
yes. But we do want to kick off a new series of polls. A while back, we had a series of polls where we were asking you what your favorite piece of music from each Star Wars film was. We're going to go ahead and do another something similar to that, but we want to know what your favorite scene from each of the films was. So I know we're going to get a ton of responses from a ton of different scenes, but I like seeing what people like. And we're going to kick it off going backwards. So we're going to kick things off with your favorite scene from The Force Awakens. So why don't you guys be thinking about that? And Carl, if they want to weigh in on our matchup, leave any comments about Ahsoka by E.K. Johnston or anything else, where can they do that?
Jason, glad you asked. Well, they can, of course, find us on Facebook, facebook.com/wampazlairpodcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wampazlair. You can always shoot us an email, wampazlairpodcast@gmail.com. And again, don't forget our Patreon page, patreon.com/wampazlairpodcast. And again, a huge thank you to both Riley Blanton and Bradley Hall, the unofficial sponsors of this episode of the Wampazlair Podcast, two of our newest patrons on Patreon. Thank you both for your support. Can't thank you enough.
And I think that'll wrap up this episode of the Wampazlair Podcast. This has been episode number 205, Ahsoka. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.